off the glass. The left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by all. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
Jones up the left side. Shoots Miller. The save. Rebound. Furland raw by Miller. As Nugent scores!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Monday. Hour one underway on this Monday, September 19th. Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon coming at you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. Welcome to training camp week. Training camp officially starts this week across the NHL and right here in Calgary at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Of course, Flames Talk is your number one source for training camp news all camp long. We're less than a week away from the preseason opener on Sunday. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Text line open if you're listening live at 960-960. And we'll kick it off with one of the names we've been talking about all summer joining the Calgary Flames on a PTO. I did not expect Sonny Milano to end up in a training camp anywhere in the NHL on a PTO. I thought he was the last guy that you could be pretty confident would end up getting a contract. Instead, maybe player and agent overplayed hands. Maybe earlier in the summer where there were potentially deals on the table. Perhaps waiting as long as they did not end up doing them favors. And instead, a PTO, a tryout on the Calgary Flames is where Sonny Milano is landing. Joining the team for training camp, and I'm really curious how it plays out, Logo, because the biggest question I have is, what is Sonny Milano in the NHL? And what type of player does he need to be to make the Calgary Flames? And what type of role does he need to be in to make the Calgary Flames out of camp? I think he's an intriguing player. I think there is a lot of talent there. I think there is a lot to like there. And yet I also don't think it's a guarantee that he signs a contract with this team if we're talking about him coming in on a PTO. I really don't, because the one thing that I have talked about the entire way when talking about this player, you know, when we had the conversations about a guy like Stastny, who was really high on your list, or a guy like Evan Rodriguez, who is really high on my list, they both signed elsewhere. But what I really like about those two players is that they can play up and down lineups. Rodriguez has got the ability to play with top players. He's also got the ability to be extremely effective in a bottom six role. I don't know if Milano is that same type of player. I don't know if you're confident playing him in a third, fourth line role. I think he's a guy that you're given the opportunity to see if he can play with really good players, and similar to what he did last year riding shotgun with Trevor Zegras in Anaheim, can he be a guy that with good players can give this team a little offensive punch in training camp and the preseason? That's the role that I think Sonny Milano could end up filling on this team, which would give them a whole lot more depth filtering on down the lineup if he can prove that playing with good players in Calgary is a role that he can fill.
It's very interesting. I wouldn't have pegged Sonny Milano. I'm sure anyone who's listened to Flames Talk over the last couple of weeks wouldn't have had us pegging Sonny Milano as a guy that came in on PTO. I mean, given everything he did with Anaheim, given everything, you know, his age, the upside that you can see offensively with him, struck me as a guy that, yeah, I think there was, I said it earlier, I thought there would be a handful of teams that would have very, you know, casually gone to Sonny Milano and said, hey, 1 year, $1 million, would that get it done for you to come here and, you know, have an opportunity in a guaranteed contract spot? But maybe you didn't like any of the fits. And I thought your point is very well made about Evan Rodriguez, because if Evan Rodriguez overplayed his hand in free agency, and look, that still turned out pretty well for him to get the kind of deal that he got with the Colorado Avalanche, and perhaps turn that into a usable deal for him and a springboard into free agency next year. But you know, when you're talking about 3 years and that kind of term on the table for you to turn it down, that's, you know, probably a frustrating thing if you're a free agent and settling with that. So Milano, you know, not far off of that for me, at least given his age and given what we've seen from him. As far as his role, Pat, I mean, this is an interesting one for me because I look at Sonny Milano and I say this. It's an interesting spot because I agree with you. The versatility up and down the lineup isn't there. I think a lot of his success will be based on the type of player around him and the type of skill that will be around him. If I was to classify Sonny Milano when I look at him, he's kind of an in-betweener for me. And what I mean by that is he's a middle six guy for me, but he's not a first liner for me, but he's also not a fourth liner for me. So I think if Sonny Milano is somewhere between your second line and your third line, I think you're probably going to be okay. And he's probably going to be with enough skill to be protected and to be an effective NHLer. That is still saying that is, you know, easier said than done, though.
I think at this stage of his career, at the age of 26, he is an, I don't want to say specialist, but he's a guy that his biggest strengths are the offensive side of his game. His biggest strengths are from the offensive blue line in. I don't think that we're talking about a guy that you're putting out there in head-to-head shutdown matchups. I don't think you're putting him out there to be in a 200-foot role. Look, in a Daryl Sutter brand of hockey, I don't think he gets a contract if he can't, at the very least, be somewhat proficient in a 200-foot game. But I don't think you're putting him out there to play with Michael Backlund in a, you know, defensively oriented shutdown role or anything like that. His best season in the NHL is the one he's just coming off of, 34 points in 66 games. And you take a look at how that was structured 5-on-5 on the Trevor Zegras line. He was up over 71% on his offensive zone, start ratio this year. Like heavily slanted to offensive zone starts this year, this past year. And you can understand why, because that is his biggest strength. When you've got a player that has a lot of talent, a lot of offensive vision, is a decent finisher, is a decent playmaker. Like, I don't think he is an elite playmaker. I don't think he has an elite shot, but he's very good and sees the game at an offensive level very high. That's always been what people have talked about when you get scouting reports on this player, going back to when he was a highly sought after player in the draft, going back to when Columbus took him 16th overall in 2014, everybody talked about the high end offensive ability, the high end offensive vision. So let him eat, put him in those situations. And I don't see those situations in a bottom six role on most NHL teams. So especially in a Daryl Sutter coached on a Daryl Sutter coached NHL team. So look, if Milano can come in and he gets an opportunity to play with Huberto and Lindholm on a number one line and kind of ride shotgun there. Remember, for me anyway, I'm really interested in the idea of pairings on this team, forward pairings. And if Lindholm Huberto is a forward pairing on this team and Milano can ride shotgun, that's really interesting to me because I think he can have a, you know, I think he'd have a decently productive season being that third guy with an elite playmaker in Huberto, with a elite play driver in Lindholm. I like that idea. I just don't know if you're putting Milano on a line with Coleman and Backlund in more of a shutdown role, you know? So I feel like it's more of a limited type of role that a guy like Milano could play on a team like this. And if he can prove that, or if he can show in training camp that he can do that well, then I think he can get a contract out of it. But I don't know if you're signing him to be a guy that, you know, is a 13th forward or something like that.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
No, I don't think this is a the same conversation, you know, surrounding Cody Eakin, let's say, the other Flames forward here on a PTO for training camp. I don't think they're in the same – I don't think they'll be asked to do the same things. Now, the interesting thing is Milano's defensive numbers aren't bad. They're not outstanding. He drives play decently within his own zone, but not at an elite level. So are you comfortable enough, you know, asking him to do a strong two-way game if it were a Backlund and Coleman pairing with him? Maybe not. I think this team is looking for more of an offensive punch. I think that's what Brad's talked about with, you know, whether it was Pierre LeBrun in The Athletic or the sit-downs that he's done the last couple of weeks here leading up to training camp. I think this is a situation where he's looking for more of an offensive punch for a guy that, and there's just not that many out there. We talked about the guys that we went through who had better numbers than, you know, Sonny Milano did offensively, and he was with a pretty skilled group in Anaheim last year. The second half of the season, his numbers fell off offensively off a cliff. I don't know what the reasoning was. I don't watch enough Anaheim Ducks hockey to tell you what that is, but I think if you're talking about Sonny Milano and where it wants to fit, I don't know, Pat, if I've seen enough to sit here and say that I think that I don't even know that we'll see him on a line with Huberto and Lindholm at some point in this training camp. Maybe.
I hope so, because I think that'd be really interesting.
But I wouldn't be stunned and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a second line thing. Like, do I think he could ride shotgun with a guy like Mangiapane and Kadri? I wouldn't put it past that.
I just, and maybe that's where they're looking at. I don't know. I'm curious if he can give them a little bit of an offensive, an extra offensive punch in that type of role. Because then all of a sudden you're putting players, not if that's the case, you've got a guy, whether it's Kadri driving a line or whether it's Lindholm driving a line and he's on that line, then all of a sudden you're trickling down really nicely. And the trickle-down effect on how it sets up the rest of the lines, I think, really gives you a whole lot more forward depth on the wing. And maybe it slots a guy like Coleman in a spot where he's really, really in a spot that he can dominate, and puts Dubé in a spot that he's better suited for success, so on and so forth. I think it's interesting. I don't even know if it's guaranteed that he signs a contract in Calgary. As somebody texts in at 960-960. Milano wants to leverage a contract from Calgary, thinking it's a good team that'll get him a good contract next year. That's what he's doing, and we'll see. I don't, you know, there's always the possibility that a guy goes to a PTO in one camp and gets a contract in another camp. I don't know. The other reason that people have been speculating why he's in on a PTO is that there have been concussion issues in the past, and maybe that's a reason why he's on a PTO. I don't know. I don't know if that is I don't know if that is a reason. I don't know if that is the main reason. And maybe the Flames are looking at him in a different role. Maybe they are looking at him to provide some bottom six offense. I just don't know if I see him excelling in that role as much as I would in kind of a shotgun top six role. We'll see. An interesting PTO, though. I like it. I like the it's not even a gamble. I like the addition to training camp because it is risk-free. There is zero risk on Calgary's side of things. He's not signed to a contract. If it works, great, sign him. If it doesn't, okay, move on. Thanks for coming. It is completely risk-free, and I quite like it because I do think there's a significant or a decent amount of upside there with the player. I really
Yeah, I think
that's why I've been talking about him.
I think
him
he
all,
honestly
all
becomes
summer.
One of, if not the most intriguing names to watch on a day-to-day basis heading into training camp, right? Are you not going to be overly intrigued as to where Milano lines up in, you know, day one of practice heading into our first couple preseason games? I know I'm going to be, because I think that's going to say a lot about where the organization sees his fit and how effective he is in that role is going to be something to watch. Because, yeah, I like that it's a PTO for the Flames because it comes with absolutely zero risk. If it's not a fit and it doesn't work out, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go our separate ways and we'll move on. But if it does work, I mean, hey, this worked out really well. This is a guy that both you and I put in the category of someone who we thought was going to have a contract somewhere by now.
Yeah, it is interesting that, you know, that he's been a guy talked about all summer long, and September 19th is when he ends up deciding on a training camp, and September 19th is when he ends up inking a PTO to go to camp with the Calgary Flames. We'll see if he gets a contract here. He is going to be one of the more fascinating guys to watch, at least in my opinion. If you're if you're asking me names to watch in training camp, he'd be right near the top of my list, along with Toffoli. Few other names that I would put into that list, but Milano certainly one of them for me. We're also, in terms of looking ahead to main camp, we're also waiting to see if the Flames make official a signing of Brett Ritchie. Our buddy Eric Francis has that today, that the Flames and Ritchie are close to signing a one-year deal. We'll see if that ends up getting made official on this Monday, if it ends up being made official closer to the start of camp. This is one that I've never understood. You know, there's always a player or two that
gets in the teeth.
When that player ends up in the lineup, when somebody posts lines for a game and that player's on those lines and in the lineup, Twitter explodes. And for whatever reason, the last few years, Brett Ritchie has been that guy. And I get that going back to that shortened 56-game season when Ritchie was playing with Monahan and Gaudreau, okay, that was a little silly. That's not where he's best suited. But as a fourth line, 12-13 forward, Brett Ritchie is fine, beyond fine. This is what I don't understand, even in the analytics community. Brett Ritchie has proven he can be a very effective fourth line player. And if the Flames do end up making that official and he does end up signing a one-year deal, I don't see the problem. I really, really don't, because you know exactly what you're going to get from him. He is an effective fourth line guy. When he is on the ice, good things happen in a limited role. You go take a look at his analytics. You go take a look at his underlines. You go take a look at what he does at 5-on-5 when he's out there. Typically, scoring chances happen. The shot attempts happen. We know he plays physical. He is not a high-end finisher. We know that. We're not going to be talking about big offensive numbers. Of course not. He's on basically, if he signs, an NHL minimum deal. But as a 12-13 forward, A, he doesn't hurt you, and B, is pretty effective in a fourth-line role. I honestly do not under... That is one that I've had a really hard time wrapping my head around, because it seems like I'm on the minority side of things when it comes to Brett. People love ragging on Ritchie, and people even when Francis put that tweet out there, people, how could they be doing this? Why did... He's a decent hockey player in his role. And you know what? If he gets beat out, his entire salary can be buried in the American Hockey League. I don't, like, there's really, in my eyes, no downside in signing the guy to a one-year deal if that ends up coming to pass. And if he does what he did last year, that's just fine. Because last year, he was a really effective 12-13 forward, in kind of a platoon guy, in sometimes, not in sometimes. And when he was in, he did just fine. And again, that's probably not even doing it full justice. He was a really effective guy in his role as a fourth line, right shot, right winger. He did his job really well.
Okay, so I won't say that I necessarily disagree with everything you said, because here's my thing with Ritchie. I don't have a problem with Brett Ritchie being in the lineup, because I don't think Brett Ritchie hurts you. That's the simplest way I can say it. I don't think Brett Ritchie hurts you. I also don't find that when Brett Ritchie's out there that he moves the needle all that much for me either. So it's really, for me, it's a pretty base neutral sort of thing for me. Here's what I would throw back at you, and it's not even me arguing with you. I'm just curious how you would respond to it.
Mm-mm.
If that's what Brett Ritchie is, an effective fourth line guy at 12-13, most of those guys come in on PTOs and have to earn that spot. Why wouldn't Brett Ritchie?
Well, because Darryl loves him. If the head coach loves you, like, you've already earned your spot.
But doesn't that just take away all of the emphasis on Brett Ritchie having to come in? Why doesn't Brett Ritchie have to come into camp and beat out Cody Eakin?
Because they know that if he does not beat out a certain player, they can bury his entire contract in the American Hockey League, and he'll be a good pro in the AHL and help that team win games with the Wranglers. That's why. I honestly, like, it's okay if a coach really likes a guy. If a guy was effective and there is a familiarity with the coach and player and he gets a contract, and Cody Eakin, who hasn't really been effective for the last number of years, doesn't. Like, that, it's okay in my eyes.
Did you know
that Brett Ritchie had the highest high danger chances percentage on the team last year?
In a much more limited role than the others he would be compared to, sure.
But that's what I'm saying. In his role, he is effective.
You can't analyze that compared to a guy that's playing 20 minutes a night compared to a guy that's playing 12,
I'm not.
You sit on the team, though.
I'm saying that in his role, playing 9 to 11 minutes a game, he got the job done. and was better than any of the other guys in his role in that regard.
Okay, I don't disagree with, again, I don't think he hurts you.
But when you're on the ice for 81 high danger chances for and 48 against, how is he just not hurting you? Isn't he helping you in a fourth line role?
If he's that good, why are we here on September 19th and he's just grabbing a contract? If he was that effective, why didn't he beat out Trevor Lewis for a contract a month ago?
Because he's a fourth line guy, and sometimes they take until late September to sign contracts or sign PTOs.
And I don't even necessarily disagree with you. I think there are people who wonder, and I'm one of them, why Brett Ritchie gets a pass on having to earn a spot with this team. And I'm not disagreeing with your point.
But he hasn't earned a spot on this team.
Well, someone will look at a contract and say he does. Or he has.
But again, he hasn't. He's on a contract, but you can bury all of that in the American Hockey League.
And take away minutes from somebody in the AHL.
You need veterans in the American League too.
Yeah, that's what Sutter is and other guys are.
Yeah. But, I don't think that he's going to be taking minutes away from anybody in the American League if he's there.
I sit here and I just don't. Again, I don't know. Does he move the needle that much? I don't know. I would just, again,
but
I don't think he hurts you. But
you're not asking him to, you're not asking a guy at $800,000 or $850,000 or $775,000 to win you hockey games single-handedly. You're asking him to be an option as one of your 13, 14 best forwards on the team. And when he gets in, to do his role and to play his role. And I think you'd rather have him in that spot than a 22-year-old playing every second game and playing 9 minutes a night, as opposed to him being in the American League and playing 20-plus minutes
a night. I don't disagree. It feels like a very crowded space for three spots, two of which are, taken up by guys that have bigger salary. Unless it's going to be more of a rotation on the fourth line this year than in years past, because this is how I look at it, and this is why, to me, it just seems like a body too many. You have Lucic, you have Rooney. Those are guys that are on significantly higher than, other fourth liners for this team, guys that are, going to be paid to play pretty close to a nightly basis. So you're rotating out through Trevor Lewis, and now it's Eakin and Ritchie. It just seems a lot for
Eakin's on a
13.
PTO.
No, I know, but he's still going to be in the conversation for that, I think, during training camp.
Yeah, but
maybe less so now that Ritchie's on the deal. But
and Eakin's a center, and he's brought, if he makes this team, it's because, hey, we want a guy that can win faceoffs and take nothing but defensive zone draws and all that type of stuff. That's why Eakin would end up getting signed, but he's not signed. He's a PTO at this point. I don't think it's a guarantee that he signs. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with having lots of NHL bodies fighting for 13 or 14 spots at training camp. And as of right now, I don't think. Remember what we said a couple of weeks ago when we said it's good if Jacob Pelche has an uphill climb to make the team? It's kind of exactly what we're talking about right now. If you're Pelche or anybody else coming out of this Young Stars Classic that just wrapped up a little earlier on this Monday, there are no gifted spots for anybody right now.
All of a sudden very crowded.
But that's good in my eyes. I don't think that's a bad thing. You want to have competition. You want to have guys who are fighting tooth and nail for spots. You want to have in-season competition. Injuries are going to happen, and then you want guys who are knocking on the door to come in hungry from the American League. This is all a good thing to me. Again, we don't even know when that's going to be official, but I think that we're probably EF's pretty confident that's going to happen. So I'm pretty confident that's going to happen. I've got no problem. Ritchie has got a familiarity with the team. They know exactly what he is. They know exactly what he'll be if he's sitting. They know exactly what he'll be if he's in the American League. I honestly have zero problem if they end up going down that road and if it crowds the situation a little bit more. And the one thing Ritchie has that a lot of guys that we're not talking about do, he is a right shot, right winger, which is something that up and down the lineup, they're a little bit more thin on.
But he's not a guy that's going to move up and down the lineup.
No, but he's still a right shot.
Sure. Well, point to you on the right shot. I definitely think they need more of it, but up and down the lineup, I don't think 24 is moving up and down the lineup.
No, I don't think. I'm just saying that organizationally at the NHL level,
it is definitely a lack of.
They don't have a lot of right shots, and Richie would
100%.
I was a little surprised to see that because we had heard this rumor that he was going to Edmonton on a PTO. And I was like, oh, it'd be a good fit in Edmonton. I'm a bit of a Richie stan, that's all. I think he gets way too bad a rap for being a decently effective player in his role. You want guys that, when you say he doesn't move the needle, I disagree. He is one of the guys in a fourth line role that does move the needle. Typically, fourth line guys have been guys who just don't get scored on. Fill space, don't get scored on, wait till our good guys get out there. Richie's one of those guys who historically, and as a member of the Flames, specifically under Darryl, when he goes out there, he does move the needle. And you're not playing him anything more than a fourth line role, but to have effective fourth line roles, fourth line players who can go out and be better than the fourth line on the other team, there is still a value in that, even if it's not as valuable as what Huberdeau or Lindholm or Kadri bring to the table.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's just for me, I look at it and I'd say he's been here for two seasons, and if he's been that effective, why hasn't he been an everydayer for this team?
Because he is what he is. Different.
No, but you
matchups.
Just said he's a guy that's effective in his role, a guy that makes a difference when he's out there. So
he's an extremely effective 12 or 13.
Wouldn't you play him 80 games instead of 41?
No, because he's an effective 12 or 13th forward, which means that sometimes you play and sometimes you don't. In that role, I think you want somebody who's effective. I'm not trying to make the case that he's going to push a team.
No, and I'm not saying you're not, but I hear what you're saying about him. And if I were to apply those to other guys, that type of effectiveness.
I don't think that he's as effective if he's anything more than what he is in the role that he is. You know what I'm saying? I think he's effective in his role.
Then it's a Stone conversation, right?
That is a really good comparison. I think it's very comparable to what Stone is for this team on the back.
Stone's on a PTO, by the way.
Stone is on a PTO. But we all think he's going to sign. That's fun. I was not expecting to come in today and say, Logo and I, we're going to talk for 15 minutes about Brett Ritchie. And we just talked 15 minutes about Brett Ritchie, and I liked it. Hour one, Flames Talk. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Ryan Pike in just minutes as we dive in on the Young Stars Classic and a whole lot more. Flames Talk Hour One's available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Hour one rolls on this Monday. Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon along with you. Young Stars Classic all wrapped up. Monday afternoon, Flames fall to the Winnipeg Jets by a 5-3 score. So the Young Stars Classic in Penticton sees the Flames lose 3-0 to Vancouver on Friday night, 3-1 to Edmonton on Saturday, and 5-3 on Monday afternoon to Winnipeg. So they go winless through the tournament. But as we know, do results matter all that much in a pre-season event with only prospect playing? You know, not really. And I think you're more focused on some of the individual performances as opposed to team records, so on and so forth. I'm Pat, he's Logan, and now down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline we go. We say hello to our buddy Ryan Pike from Flames Nation and flamesnation.ca. Hello, Pike, how are you?
Hi, Pat, how are you doing? How was your weekend?
It was fine, it was good. It was hard on my liver, but you know what? That doesn't matter. We can talk about that another time. Young Stars Classic and Penticton, all wrapped. How would you look at it overall from a Flames standpoint, my friend?
I mean, I think, for lack of a better term, they are who we thought they were. If you looked at the goaltending, Dustin Wolf was pretty good if you consider the quality of the opposition he faced. I thought Daniil Chechelev was, you know, full marks today, even though, you know, he gave up 4 goals. But again, the quality of the chances he was facing was a little bit much. The defensive group, kind of so-so. I'm trying to, you know, it's hard to translate in radio, but I'm sort of wiggling my hand back and forth. I think the challenge for them is, you know, they have, you know, pretty much graduated a lot of their tippity-top prospects on the blue line to the NHL. And probably the best guy who wasn't there was Jake Boltman, who was getting ready to play in the NCAA for his, I believe his junior year. And then, I mean, look at the guys they had. I mean, the most experienced defenseman they had was Ilya Solovyov, who was sort of this number six defenseman in Stockton last year. With the Wranglers, with the number of bodies they have, and depending on, you know, if they make a move or not with guys above him, he might not even play as much as he did last season in Stockton. So it was the 6'7" guy on the Wranglers depth chart as the most experienced defenseman, and then a bunch of guys who played barely any pro or haven't played any pro at all. So it was, you know, they were in the defensive zone at times a bit of an adventure, but I thought, you know, some of the forwards showed really well. I was really impressed by Adam Klapka, much more than I thought I'd be. I thought Connor Zary, so Ashes, you know, really nice play. I thought, you know, Emilio Peterson was really good today. I thought Jacob Pelche was pretty good in two of the three games. Cole Schwint was always noticeable. So was Walker Dewar. So, I mean, the guys I expected to notice, I noticed quite a bit. And in the blue line group, I didn't expect much out of and didn't get much out of. So, like I said, they are who we thought they were.
Guy who I think of the three games I like the most, just in terms of who he is, what he means for the organization, what he could be, and a step taken from one year to the next, I point right to Connor Zary, man. I thought he showed a number of different stretches throughout this event where some of the things he did offensively, some of the things he did in tight, I don't know if we would have seen him do those things last year. I think we're talking about a much more confident version of Connor Zary.
You know, I hate to say this, but I think that injury he had last year might have been the best thing to happen to him, because, you know, he was a guy who sort of, there was a lot thought of him, and he was coming into his first year pro, and he, you know, he broke his ankle blocking a shot in one of the rookie games and was basically out until right before Christmas. And as a result, you know, he was, I think, in terms of systems, in terms of fitness, I think he was behind everybody else because he simply didn't have a training camp. But in terms of expectations, like, he had the benefit of, you know, he was playing third or fourth in the rotation for Stockton amongst centers. And so he was able to just sort of, you know, play a little bit less and work on things and then build himself up and work on things a bit more. And by the last, I'd say, 8 to 10 weeks of the season, he was one of Stockton's most consistently noticeable players in terms of being a difference maker. And I don't know if he would have had that opportunity had they just sort of thrown him into the top six right away. He had to play his way into it rather than sort of getting that spot and having to play his way out of it. And, you know, I thought he was, I agree with you. I thought he's, you know, I think he's probably the most consistently noticeable forward. Maybe Adam Klapka's in that conversation too, but, you know, Zary was, you know, every time I saw him in the neutral and offensive zone, he was doing something smart with the puck. And, you know, you put him with some guys who can finish, or maybe, you know, put in some, even just give him some more reps with the guys he's playing with. I think the expectations are high for him this season, and rightfully so.
It's tough not to notice Klapka because he's so big. 6'8", like, this dude is an absolute monster. He's got, you know, in this event, in this type of competition, I did not feel like the foot speed or skating held him back. I thought he kept up and was, you know, right there the entire time. He's got some, maybe a little underrated, I don't even know if it's underrated, but just, I don't know if you always see hands and skill from guys of that size. I don't know. I'm intrigued by him. I have no idea. Is he David Wolf, or does he aspire to more? But, man, he was fun to watch, especially, I thought, first couple of games, he really popped for the Flames.
Yeah, and I think he seems like the kind of guy, like, the big question with bigger dudes is always their boots. So, like, Hunter Smith was a guy who was big and pretty good at the OHL level, and then he was, you know, his skating held him back and kept him in the East Coast League. And there's a lot of guys where, you know, at other levels of hockey, they're big and they're impressive and they stand out, and then they play against grown men or in a high skill league and it doesn't quite work out for them. I mean, Adam Klapka, he was very impressive playing against a bunch of guys. You know, let's be, if we're being honest here, most teams didn't send their AHL team. Most teams sent their youngest guys, like, there's, you know, their third and fourth line and some unsigned guys. And in that environment, he stood out. And if you're the Flames, you were hoping he'd stand out. So I think he's done everything he could have done to, you know, impress at this tournament. Now the big question is, you know, when they throw him in, I assume we'll see him in the preseason either on Sunday or later in the week. I'm really curious to see how he looks in more of an NHL-ish environment, because so far I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how far away an NHL-ish environment is. I guess the American League would be a nice first step. I'm curious about him. And then last one on the Young Stars, Jacob Pelche. He was the guy that everybody was buzzing about going in with an opportunity to kind of use this as a springboard into main camp. That main camp has just gotten a little bit more crowded, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes. But what did you make of Jacob Pelche's entire event?
I think overall he's pretty decent. I think the challenge for Pelche was he was really noticeable in the first game and really noticeable in the second game, or actually the third game rather. But I think against Edmonton, because the Flames were chasing so often, I think, you know, Pelche is one of those heart and soul guys who really wants to be a difference maker. And I think that's a good thing most of the time. But I think when they're chasing in games, I think he had tendencies at times in the Edmonton game to do a bit too much, to sort of, you know, get too busy, pull himself out of position a bit, trying to, you know, make that one extra play to be a difference maker rather than sort of playing within himself. And, you know, he hasn't played hockey in a few months. So I think, you know, he was due for a little bit of a game with a bit of rust in it, but, you know, I thought he was, you know, one of the more consistent Flames. And, you know, I'm curious what he's going to look like in an environment where, you know, you don't really have to go back in the defensive zone to get the puck to connect a lot. Cause I thought overall, if I was going to criticize one thing that the Flames young blue line had, they were really challenging in terms of getting their transition game going. And as a result, I think sometimes the forwards had to come back a little bit too much and then do a bit too much and then chaos ensued. So, but you know, like I said on Twitter, they got zero of a possible 0 points. So they are, you know, in terms of standings, in terms of progress, they're no further ahead or behind as they were. And I think, you know, if you're an optimist and you're thinking, oh man, I really hope Jacob Pelche plays for the Flames on October 13th. Well, if you're a big Pelche supporter, you're probably thinking, well, better he struggle, you know, have a game where he struggles or a couple of games where he's not at his best in a, you know, this kind of environment where everyone's a little bit rusty than in preseason when, you know, things actually start mattering a bit.
He is Ryan Pike. He joins us weekly from Flames Nation and FlamesNation.ca, joining us here on Flames Talk from the Young Stars Classic to logo what looks like a very crowded main camp starting later this week.
Yeah, right. Some interesting news today, and I'm curious to get your take. What are your initial reactions to Sonny Milano? What do you make of the player, and what do you see as far as a fit with the Flames?
I mean, it'd be better for the Flames if he was a righty, but I think, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, the name's been sort of bandied about for a while in terms of, ooh, that could be a good fit. And, you know, he seems like he'd be, you know, a complimentary piece. He was real good for half the season last year with Anaheim, and then in the second half, he sort of tailed off a bit. If you look at his entire career, I mean, that was sort of the knock on him with Columbus, where, you know, in that organization, he'd have 2 or 3 weeks of being really, really good and then sort of, you know, level off a bit. And last season, you know, he leveled off after a really, really, really good first half. And then his leveling off made him, you know, he was pretty decent then. So I think that, you know, he didn't get signed by Anaheim. He, you know, I believe he wasn't qualified as a restricted free agent because, you know, if you're Anaheim, you have no idea after 14 goals and 34 points what an arbitrator is going to give him. And I think that made him a bit nervous. And, you know, from a playing standpoint, he's a guy that, you know, with the right players, with the right role and the right line mates, he can, you know, score goals and keep the puck out of the net. And I think especially if you, you know, he's got that finishing ability. If you can put him with, you know, I think right now if you're, you know, fantasy booking, you know, putting someone like him with some speed and some finishing ability on a line with, say, Michael Backlund could be a good fit because, you know, Backlund can take care of the two-way play, and then Milano doesn't need to worry about, you know, the last 50 feet of the zone as much, and then he can maybe cheat a bit towards offense, which, to be blunt, is kind of what his skill set has been at the NHL level. So he's kind of intriguing. I'm curious to see how he fits in and what kind of chemistry emerges.
Another guy that should be joining the Flames soon, depending on it getting official or not, but Eric Francis has reported today that Brett Ritchie seems likely to be back with the Flames on a one-year deal. How do you see Ritchie in his last 2 years? This would be his third year with the Flames, going back to that first year back in the pandemic shortened season. What do you make of Brett Ritchie, and what do you make of bringing him back to this forward group specifically?
I mean, you know, the nice thing for Richie is he knows the team. He knows his system. I would say he's sort of the forward equivalent of Michael Stone, where, you know, I'm not sure how much ceiling Brett Richie has, but, you know, he's a guy that can play, you know, 12, 13 minutes a night. And he's always going to give you a ton of energy. He's like a Tasmanian devil. He, you know, he'll score a couple goals that surprise you during the season, and then he'll disappear offensively for half the year. But during that half the year, you're never going to notice him because he's never really going to do too much to hurt the team. And I think if you're Daryl Sutter and, you know, you're a team that thinks that you have the horses potentially going long run, having even the depth pieces, having guys like Brett Richie who can come in and sort of give you quality minutes in a pinch as, you know, as the 13th or 14th forward, you know, I think it's not a bad fit. So I'm reserving judgment until I sort of see what the cap hit is. If it's, you know, I think last year you ended up getting $900,000, but also last year you got $900,000 because the Flames were sort of in a pinch and they had to sign someone someone with a certain amount of experience to cover their exposure requirements for the expansion draft. So Brett Richie was the beneficiary of being the right guy at the right place at the right time with a certain amount of leverage. This year, he it's the fact that he wasn't signed potentially till the 19th or 20th of September screams he didn't have nearly as much leverage this year as he did last year. So based on that, I don't expect him to get quite as much money. But, you know, if he's inexpensive, he's flexible. They can put him in the AHL. They can keep him as 13th forward. They can use him in a pinch. I mean, he's versatile. You can't really play him too high up in the roster, but I think for what he is and for what they seem to value that he does, I think that's a decent fit.
How do you see the competition level, looking in camp, Ryan? I think a lot of this summer we've made, you know, mention of the 10 one-way contracts on defense and the names that were brought in earlier. Now we have some more bodies to add to the forward group, and that's, you know, still without Adam Rozicka signed as of today. How do you look at that for the Calgary Flames and for the options that Daryl Sutter will have heading into training camp starting, I guess, Wednesday with fitness testing?
Well, they're going to have a lot of horses. That's the thing. I mean, you know, the Flames seem to have that top eight of the top nine sort of established. I know, you know, folks were, you know, penciling in Pelche's name as potentially fitting on that third line somewhere. He could be an option. I think a dark horse for me might be Cole Schwint because he's been quite good. I want to see more of him in camp, but he's an option. Ben Jones has played NHL minutes. Brett Richie's we know what Brett Richie is, for better or for worse. Clark Bishop is decent in a pinch. Milano, Cody Eakin. I mean, if nothing else, they've created some competition. Like if Jacob Pelche is here on October 13th, it'll be because he had to beat out six or seven guys for that gig. And I think that's kind of what the Flames want from whoever ends up being on the roster. And they have a lot of guys that they could probably get through waivers, both at forward and defense. And I think, in a long season, they were extremely lucky last year. They avoided significant injuries pretty much until Sean Monahan went down. And then even then they avoided really significant injuries until the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be quite as lucky this year. And based on the way they've built their roster, I'm thinking they don't think they're going to be that lucky either. So they've sort of built in a lot of, for lack of a better term, redundancy into their reserve list, where, you know, you have, you know, five, six, seven guys they think can probably play center at the NHL. And they probably have, you know, five, six, seven guys on each side of the wing that could be an option. And, you know, knock on wood, they don't need them, but I think from their perspective, if they need them, I think they have more depth than they had, at least at the NHL level, for the last little while.
I don't see a problem. I know that there is always, I think it's probably in most NHL markets, but I know in this market, every time around this year, it's like, well, there needs to be more room for young players to play. And while I get that from like an excitement and intrigue side of things, like, I don't think there's anything wrong at all, Pike, when you're talking about an extremely difficult team to make. Like, okay, let's say Brett Richie does sign a one-year deal, and there's no guarantee he's on this team, because as you mentioned, his entire salary would likely be able to be buried in the American Hockey League. There is going to be more competition at this camp than I can remember in quite some time. When you throw in the PTOs, when you throw in some of the young players that a lot of people hope can knock on the door. I don't know. I think it's only a good thing that the Flames look like they're going to be an extremely difficult team to make out of training camp this year. That's what you want.
And I'm sure the text line's going to throw a fit after we say this out loud, so I'll say this with a thousand grains of salt. A lot of weird things can happen in hockey, but this is a team where many of the players, and I imagine, you know, a lot of people in management, think they have the horses to win a Stanley Cup or at least make a good push for it. So if you think you're a team that's good or very good, like they're coming off a division win last year, they made the second round of the playoffs, based on all these factors, they should be a tough team to make. They shouldn't be able to come off a good AHL season and just, you know, make the team by default. And I think there's a lot of guys who, you know, were in the NHL last year who might be hard-pressed to make the team. And that's a good thing. I mean, you know, Brad Ritchie spent the entire year in the NHL last year. Like you said, he is, you know, based on the depth chart we see, he's by no means guaranteed to make the team. Nick Meloche played most of the season in the NHL last year, and he's pretty good. He's not guaranteed to make the team either. And I think having a lot of those guys, I mean, Brad Treliving's talked for pretty much as long as he's been the GM here about having that push from the bottom with, you know, you have, you know, hungry guys, you know, on entry-level deals, or even hungry guys who are sort of in that quad A group. They have a lot of the quad A group. They have a lot of guys, you know, on AHL deals who probably think they want to be pushing for jobs and probably credibly could push for jobs in a lot of other NHL markets. And there's probably going to be, let's be honest, there's going to be a lot of NHL caliber players playing in Stockton or playing for the Wranglers this year. And I think that's only going to be a good thing for the team this year.
Thank you, Pike. Be well. We'll see you at camp later this week.
Looking forward to it, man.
Ryan Pike of Flames Nation and FlamesNation.ca. That's the most talkative goodbye he's ever had. By far, the most talkative goodbye he's ever had.
Yeah, by a long shot.
You know what? Everybody shows growth. I give Pike a hard time about his goodbyes every single time.
I appreciate it, actually. I think it works.
Introducing Calgary's newest ice hockey league, the Sport and Social Club Hockey League, powered by CSSC. It's 3-on-3, which means more breakaways, more assists, more goals. It's also played exclusively at the Hockey Hub YYC once a week, so no more chaotic schedules. It's only $2,500 for 11 weeks with licensed refs, time and stat trackers, and access to Carha Insurance. Your dentist, yeah. Well, thank you. Register by September 21st for the first game on the 27th. Visit CalgarySportsClub.com. It's Pat and Logo along with you. This is hour one of Flames Talk wrapping up. Available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Sonny Milano, PTO, rumors of maybe a Brett Ritchie contract, Ryan Pike as well, all in hour one. And Pike joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast.